This week, a look back at the case of Officer Daniel Wineski, who spent his career sexually abusing the women and girls of Whitehall, Wisconsin, and the man who worked for decades to expose Wineski's crimes announces that he is running for sheriff. This is Bad Cop No Donut for the week of June 15th, 2006. I'm Ron Anisich with your weekly wrap-up of North American police brutality, misconduct, and corruption. On February 3rd, 2005, Bad Cop No Donut broadcast its first interview. It was with a man named Terry Miles, who worked for many years, decades in fact, to expose the misdeeds of Whitehall, Wisconsin police officer Daniel Wineski. Wineski was a sexual predator who preyed on the women of Whitehall throughout his entire career, which spanned over 20 years. In November 2004, Wineski was convicted of forcing a then 14-year-old girl to perform a sex act on him in his squad car in 1996. In this program, we will listen to excerpts from our original interview with Terry Miles. We will also listen to excerpts from an interview with Alicia Rodriguez, who was 14 years old when she was sexually assaulted by Officer Wineski. This month, Terry Miles announced that he is running for sheriff of Trempealeau County, Wisconsin. We also have a new interview with Terry Miles later in this program. But first, here are some excerpts from our original interview with Terry Miles.
Okay, when I got out of the Marine Corps, I got out in June of 86. And by late 87, 88, I was back in Whitehall. And I was in a bar, and a friend of mine told me that Wineski had raped his girlfriend during a traffic stop. And there's three other women in there that all said, this is true, and the police and sheriff's department won't do anything about it. So they asked me for help.
So when they asked you for your help, what were you thinking that you could do to help them out?
We could find women that would talk, and we would go to WEAU TV 13 in Eau Claire.
These other three women that you mentioned, had they had the same thing happen to them, or they were just backing up the story of the person?
No, they were all three victims. And they didn't want to go to the TV station. They were afraid of the cops.
Did any of them file a formal complaint?
I think Steve Amundsen's girlfriend did. That was a friend that came to me.
And you mentioned a moment ago that you had made an attempt to find other victims. How did that work?
I was finding them, and I didn't realize what I was up against. I was kind of naive then. And in the process of asking for these women, someone apparently went and told one of the cops what I was doing. And a man who I knew to be an undercover narcotics informant, who operated under the alias of Logan Hansen, confronted me and told me that if I kept it up, I would wake up with coke in my car and cops in my driveway, and I would be headed for Waupun. Wisconsin, Waupun is prison.
So the police threatened to plant drugs on you and have you arrested?
Yep, to plant drugs in my car and have me arrested.
How did you actually find the other victims?
It was really easy, just like it was this time. You just go to a bar and ask. I just walked into a bar and I said, hey, does anybody know anything about Wineski and the girls? And the names come.
How many people did you find out that he had assaulted in the end?
I probably talked to maybe 25, 30 people before they came and threatened me.
So you've been accumulating this evidence, and you found these 25 women. What happened next?
That's when I was... none of them would be willing to go up to TV 13 and talk. And before I could find... I wanted three. I don't know why, but... one would have been sufficient, but that's when I was confronted by the informant and threatened with having cocaine planted.
Did you make complaints to the police or anyone else for that matter?
No, I was told by the victims and my friend Steve, not, it won't do any good, you'll just get in trouble. In 91, I was painting billboards along the highways. My friend Steve was with me. And I came up with the idea that why don't we call up his wife and we'll pretend to be the angry father of a 16-year-old And maybe that will get things moving enough that people will start talking, and then we can get the TV stations back in there.
Did you do it?
Oh, yeah.
Did it work?
Steve was pulled over. They tried to pull him over for squealing his tires at a stop sign, and he didn't want to be pulled over by them. He took him on a rather high-speed chase, and they kept him in jail on a probation hold, even though his probation was up from that check and car thing before. His time was served, his probation was up, but he still owed restitution on the car, so they extended his probation on that. They kept him in jail for approximately 30 days, or 60 days, and then they just told his wife, the jail's full, we don't have any place to keep him, we're sending him to prison. And the next day they put him in a squad car and took him to a medium security facility.
For 30 days?
Yes, and I have documents showing that his court date was set for, I believe it was January 29th, and I have letters from him postmarked from prison prior to January 29th, as early as January 2.
So do you think they did this because they found out that you had called Wineski's wife?
Yeah. We didn't actually make too big of a secret of it.
Oh, I see. So this is still in the early 90s, and you've already found a good number of women that have been violated by this cop.
Yeah.
What was the next step then?
After that, I didn't hear anything.
For how long?
Until the year 2000.
And what did you start hearing then?
I went back to get my taxes done. I had a good tax preparer. I went back to get my taxes done. And while I was there, I met a woman, and I explained to her why I had moved across the state and everything. And she goes, yeah, you know what happened to me? Her son had been pulled over and arrested for drunk driving and possession of marijuana. And the very next night, Wineski started following her home from work. Well, at the end of the week, Wineski pulled her over and walks up to the car, and he goes, you know, your son's in a lot of trouble. He could be facing prison time, probably get a couple years out of it. And I've got a speeding ticket here for you, but I can take care of everything for a blowjob. That's when I realized that it never stopped, and I thought, well, my God, this started in the early 1980s. It's been almost 20 years. And when I got back home, I started calling up friends of mine from high school and saying, hey, you know, do you remember all that stuff Wineski did with the girls back in the 80s? I'm like, yeah, and I said, well, he's still doing it. I said, we got to start talking to somebody and put an end to this.
So what came next?
Then I sent a package down to the Division of Criminal Investigation.
I just want to clear that up. They're the state authorities in Wisconsin?
Yes, that's the number one investigators in Wisconsin.
Okay.
And I went to a man named David Collins. What I did not know was that he was originally from Trumbull County. He had started out with the Trumbull County Sheriff's Department.
Which is the county which contains Whitehall.
Whitehall is the county seat.
Okay.
So the Whitehall Police Department and the Trumbull County Sheriff's Department share facilities. Okay. So now this David Collins is in charge of white-collar crime for the entire state. He's the one that decides whether or not crooked cops are going to be investigated, then he hands the cases to the agency. So I send the whole thing down to him after talking to him on the phone for probably 45 minutes. He gets it, told me he was on vacation. He'd read it when he got back. I called back in 2 weeks, and he told me that just from talking to me on the phone, I did not have a case. He said, do you hear this? There's a loud thump. And he goes, that's your package going in the garbage. I'm not even going to waste my time opening it up.
These are, you say they're conversations that you had with police officers.
With me and Sheriff Niederkorn.
Did they involve Wineski at all? Obviously, yes.
Yes.
And what kind of things did the sheriff say?
I've been hearing stories about Dan Wineski since I was 16 years old, and the sheriff said, yeah, I know. And later on, I would get several things on tape from Sheriff Niederkorn, but at that point in time, I had that and an explanation of what was going on in Trumbull County.
And their reaction was throwing your documents into the garbage bin. So
yes.
So what did you do next?
Then I contacted the FBI.
And were they a little more helpful?
They said that I could not file complaints on behalf of the women. I had to find at least one woman that would come forward and do it herself. I talked to several of them, and they told me no. simply because they're scared. Well, then I just kept getting more and more on tape. I started sending out copies of the tapes to the FBI, CBS, NBC, Fox. Everybody was getting everything, and this drug on for about 3 years. And I said, you know what, I'm never going to have a life again. I mean, this is not any way for a person to live. So I figured I got to come up with some way that after having wiped myself out financially, moving across the state and doing this for 3 years, there's got to be some basically really inexpensive way to get things moving. So I waited until August 2003.
Okay.
And that's when I handed out flyers.
Sorry, you said you handed out flyers?
That's during the parade to all the people on the sidewalk in Whitehall watching the parade during Beef and Dairy Days.
Okay.
And the flyer reads like this. Hi, my name's Terry Miles. I'm working to make Trumbull County a better place to live. Do you have a problem or complaint about law enforcement or the judicial system in Trumbull County? Do you have knowledge of misconduct or illegal activity by law enforcement or courthouse personnel? Abusing power or authority for personal gain to get money, drugs, or sex. Misappropriation or misuse of money and property. Excessive or unnecessary use of force. Law enforcement not responding to calls. Law enforcement taking hours or even days to arrive at the scene of an incident. Intimidating or threatening victims and witnesses. Refusal to investigate or take statements. Using drugs and alcohol while working or on duty. And then I went on to explain that I lived there for 32 years and this can't be allowed to go on. Well, I handed out about 400 of these during parade.
In a town of 1,500 people, you handed out 400 of these flyers. I imagine that the police would have been made aware of this almost immediately.
Oh, yeah. They were. They didn't like it. The sheriff threatened me with civil suits. He told me that the deputies were actually going to take their working union dues and some of their own money and pull together to get a lawyer and file a class action suit against me. Well, the reason that I picked these 8 points here, from abusing power to using drugs and alcohol,
mm-hmm.
The reason I picked those 8 points was I could back every one of them up with the sheriff's own words on tape. No, this whole flyer is one big question. I went on to say I have personal experience and or firsthand information of all of the above. I was a resident of Trumbull County for 32 years before workforce my move to Fond du Lac County.
Did you get any response from victims of Daniel Wineski through the flyers?
Yes. I got to stop and think for a second because there's been so many in the last year. I get them confused. It was very effective. I brought in more. It was actually more witnesses to what went on.
So some of the people who got in touch with you described events that you were already aware of somewhat.
Yes. There's a classmate of mine. He came to me about a month or 2 months later, and he told me that back in the early 80s while I was in the Marine Corps, a woman had asked him to ride home with her. And they were both sober. They're driving speed limit nice and safe. They got pulled over by Wineski. And when he saw that my friend was in the car, he got very angry and started yelling at him and went back in a squad car and left. Never explained to him why they were pulled over.
Then
there was that masturbating and quick trip thing, but that seems to be two separate incidents. The one that I was aware of and the one that I did get a little bit of the sheriff on tape talking about was there had been some money missing out of the cash register at Quick Trip in Whitehall. And like most Quick Trips, they have the two-way mirrors. There's a little closet behind there. Well, they asked the Whitehall Police Department to investigate, and one of the clerks walked in, out of the area, is a closet.
Right.
He had walked in there, and Dan was a little short guy, and I guess he was standing on a box looking through the two-way mirror with his pants around his ankles, masturbating. And now this one that just came up, that Deputy Paul Wosel knew about, happened in 1988, and he was masturbating in the candy aisle. The one that I heard about was in the mid-90s.
And this one in the candy aisle, apparently he cornered some young female employee of the store.
Yes. There's also a statement in the DCI records released from the girl. We just call her AR. I mean, her name's public record, but I'd still like to keep it confidential out of respect to her.
Yes.
She's the one that he was actually charged with assaulting. He was masturbating in her yard in front of her window at one point in time in the late 90s.
So this would be late 90s, would be after the alleged offense.
Yes.
This is far from the only example of this kind of behavior that targeted extremely young women. Could you maybe tell us about a few other crimes that you became aware of over the course of your work?
Reading these reports from the DCI, apparently there were several of them that were a lot younger than 14. Basically anything between 11 and 42.
And how many women are we talking about here?
I told the FBI between 300 and 400, and that's what it says in the documents that I contacted the FBI, and I gave a list of names to them, and the one name that's not censored out is the name that he was charged with, and then down below it says that Miles stated there would be 300 women involved.
So apparently the DCI, the state authorities, chose to investigate this at some point. Could you tell us what led to that investigation, especially seeing as they had previously dumped your complaint in the garbage?
One day I lost my temper and I told Sheriff Niederkorn, I said, look, every word you've spoken to me for the last 3 years is on tape. I own these tapes and I can do whatever I want, and that includes mass produce them and give them away, whole or in part. And that's exactly what I'm going to do. And Niederkorn wouldn't talk to me for about 3 weeks after that. And then he used a man named Joe Taylor, which is very interesting because Joe's been to federal prison for making pipe bombs. But he used Joe Taylor to call me up, acting as a liaison, to set up, quote, peace talks at the sheriff's house.
What was your response?
I went.
And how did it go?
I said, I want Dan Wineski for the sexual assaults of young girls. And Sheriff Niederkorn said, no, you're going to have to do that on your own. You can write up and bring charges on behalf of the state and present the evidence yourself. I said, well, can't you call the Department of Justice and ask them to come up and help? And he said, well, you know, I just sent a report down. If I send another one, they're going to go, oh, this guy can't do anything right. I called the FBI and asked for the Sexual Predator Squad or the Police Corruption Squad. He goes, Terry, they won't come unless it's a bomb or a bank robbery. They won't even come for a bank robbery anymore. It's got to be a bomb. And even then, maybe. So the sheriff just out and out lied to me. The sheriff directed me to an agency called Crime Victim Rights. And I spoke to a woman named Georgia Black. And she goes, you need to be talking to the Public Integrity Bureau. So I put together a package that was about 3 inches thick. I had transcripts of probably half my tapes in there. All my complaints, there was 21 of them against police officers, the district attorney, the DA's secretary. Shipped it all down to Madison. Robbie Lowry got it. He sent it to Agent Sogla. Agent Sogla called me up, talked to me. We negotiated whether or not I was going to give up a list of the women's names because this time I had no faith or trust in the state of Wisconsin. And it turned out that Agent Sogla was actually from Whitehall. He had been a Whitehall cop at one time. He graduated with some of my friends a few years older than me. So I talked to them, and they said, hey, Terry, Paul's one of the best guys there is. If anybody's going to do a good job, he will. So I called Paul back. I gave him a list of 5 or 6 names, and there it was.
And so the investigation was launched, and you mentioned earlier that they eventually ended up interviewing over 100 women.
Yes, 21 of them were beyond the statute of limitations.
Why was Wineski only charged with this one crime, considering how prolific his criminal activity seems to have been? Do you know?
I've been told there's a statute of limitations. It cuts off 14 and 15, that cuts off, and it gets much shorter for the 16 and 17-year-olds, and then for the adults, it's only 6 years for sexual assault.
And no other women were willing to come forward who had been violated within the past 6 years, I guess.
I have to testify, there was the other acts of evidence brought in as a motion, a motion to allow other acts as evidence. That was 8 other women prior to the statute of limitations that would be willing to testify. Most, if not all, of the assaults were while he was on duty. He was using his position as a police officer.
And there's some evidence in the report from the DCI investigation that some evidence that indicates that his superiors, in fact, were well aware of what had been going on. But you were aware of this already.
Yes, the chief of police admitted that he heard, and he uses the word rumors. He goes, I heard rumors of the masturbating in Quick Trip. He goes, I heard rumors of the sexual assaults. He had complaints from the lifeguard that he was spending too much time at the pool. The city administrator also said something about that. There was complaints from the high school that he was spending too much time up there.
There was some testimony that was given by his fellow Whitehall police officers, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, the other officers liked to park his squad car and watch through windows of houses where he knew that women and young girls were. He'd use binoculars. That one deputy, I said it was in 1988 that he knew about Wineski masturbating in the candy aisle. There was Deputy Mark Ingervold had a rape reported to him when he arrested a woman for drunk driving. I have a copy of a notarized statement that was sent to Paul Agent Sogla. It's from a man in Independence. And he states very clearly that him and his brother both confronted Police Chief Larry Estenson about the Quick Trip masturbating incident. And Larry's reply was, if you can prove it, I'll do something about it. And they also confronted former Sheriff Ralph Weisenberger about a woman that was mentally handicapped. And they knew her last name, but they couldn't remember her first name. And Sheriff Weisenberger told them, like as if he already knew. So that would be Sheriff Niederkorn, Sheriff Weisenberger, Chief of Police Larry Estenson, Paul Losel, Paul Orson, Dale Lingen, Bruce Lama, Mark Ingervold. I think that's all the officers that are documented. And then there's the city administrator, Lynn Johnson.
Is anyone planning to charge any of these officers who arguably were extremely negligent in their duties at the very least? Are they facing discipline or any kind of charges?
They asked Robbie Lowry about that, and he told me it's all a civil matter. The investigation has been stopped.
So if there is to be any justice, it will have to be some kind of a lawsuit.
Yes, and if these women aren't willing to come forward and testify at a trial, they're surely not going to get a lawyer and sue. In other words, it's almost all over, and I don't think that's right. When you realize what would have came forward in 88, there could be, 100, 150 assaults that would have never happened?
I'm just wondering if you're planning on pursuing this any further, or...
Yes, there's actually several other acts of corruption in that area. There's other officers, county officers that have been... It's been brought to my attention that they're known for the Wineski-style assaults. There's a lot of questions about drugs being used by deputies. I do have a letter from Sheriff Niederkorn stating very clearly that the deputies are not drug tested. Ever. They get tested at the time of hire, and after that, you're just good. They're county employees, and school bus drivers in Wisconsin have to take drug tests.
But not the police.
Not the Trempealeau County Sheriff's Department. I said, and that is in writing. He signed his name to it. But that was one of my public records requests. I wanted to know the results of the last three random drug tests. And I got a reply back. Your request is denied because we don't drug test.
I you were telling me also that you're considering writing a book about all of this.
Yeah, The Midnight Ride. That was a euphemism for the sexual assaults in Whitehall. That's how common it was. Everybody knew. In my search for victims and witnesses, I talked to two people that did not know anything.
And two people out of possibly hundreds you spoke with?
Hundreds, easily. And one had only lived in Whitehall for maybe a year, and the other one had never actually lived in Whitehall. She lived in Galesville.
Well, Terry, it's arguable. I know you're disappointed that this officer, Wineski, is going to possibly be out of jail within 20 months, but you have to realize that had it not been for your efforts, then the seven-year sentence that he did get a couple of months ago would probably have never happened.
Yeah, it's. I went through every agency twice. I've got a file 3/4 of an inch thick of just letters that I mailed to the FBI. I can't believe it took this long. That long just to find someone that would listen. And then once they did listen, it's like they didn't want to hear it. And that's why the investigation was stopped, I believe.
So you spent almost 20 years on this.
I waited a very long time for the phone call. A friend of mine called up and said, Terry, I thought you want to know. Dan got arrested today.
What was your first reaction when you heard that news?
Well, I had been in bed. I was just about to sleep, and I thought, God, you know what? I think I'm going to go downtown and have a beer. And so I did. And the very next day, they let him walk on a $10,000 signature bond. He had a 9-month paid vacation. He was on paid administrative leave. He was arrested on March 15th, sentenced on November 10th. He was paid up until, I think, November 5. The city of Whitehall continued to pay him, and he was a free man for that whole time. And he did try to break the terms of his bond and contact one of the other 8 women that came forward to testify.
For what purpose? Do you know?
To make her not testify.
To threaten her?
Yes.
Was that ever brought up in court?
No, and I don't understand why his bond wasn't. Agent Sogla told me about that after it was all over.
This was one of the DCI investigators?
Sogla is actually like the one that I trust and like. Other than that, I don't have much faith in a DCI. To demonstrate their sheer incompetence, there's also some paperwork in this file that after Wineski was already in prison, Whitehall Police Chief Larry Essen was cleaning out his desk. He found the diary that belonged to AR. He called up Agent Sogla. Sogla said, keep everything in evidence. Estenson has this story about how everything that he took out prior to the diary went in a dumpster, then the dumpster went to the incinerator and was burnt. The diary stayed. It was like Estenson was cleaning out the desk and throwing stuff in a dumpster. He finds a diary, calls Sogla, but at some point in time, the dumpster went to the incinerator and got burnt.
So,
but it gets even more weird because AR told me back initially after the arrest that they had searched Wineski's house. And I'm thinking, well, if they got a search warrant for the house, why didn't they get one for his desk and locker at work? Because if this involves other women, he's not going to keep any evidence where his wife could find it. You know, why didn't they search his desk in March? Now you got a police chief who's, you know, accused of years of cover-up for this guy. He burns half the stuff in his desk and then calls up Agent Sogla and says, hey, you know what? I found a diary that belongs to that girl.
One of the strangest things that I remember from reading through all of the documentation that you've sent me already was the huge number of letters of support that Wineski got prior to his sentencing from various community members.
I have copies of them here, and most of those came from people that were tied to the courthouse one way or another.
Can you explain how this happened? Can you explain how so many people in the community, even after the officer had been found guilty of sexually assaulting a 14-year-old girl, how there would be so many people in a community that would be willing to write letters, very generous letters of support?
That I don't get. There was 5 of them. The ones at the hospital, I don't understand. The one, I believe it's a Brickner, is, I know one of these people is actually the principal of the Whitehall High School. And one of my friends took the letter to school and confronted him with it, and he became very angry and said that no one was ever supposed to see that except for him and the judge. He didn't realize that letter was a public record. And I think the cops coerced people into writing these by telling them it was going to be a private matter and no one would ever see it.
And, of course, documents submitted to the court are a matter of public record.
Yes. And with my years of living in Whitehall, it's very possible the police used whatever leverage they had. because the saying is, with that courthouse, if one of them goes down, they're all going down. And if I can push a little bit harder and get someone else to look a little bit deeper, I still believe that all those officers that knew about the Winooski assaults that did nothing are just as responsible as he is. You know, it in Wisconsin, there was a mother recently charged for allowing a 20-year-old man to sleep with her 14-year-old daughter. They're a boyfriend-girlfriend. She's being charged with felony of failure to protect a child. She's looking at several years in prison. That's a mother giving parental consent. These are police officers for the no one gave consent, including the victims. They're not even getting dismissed as officers.
What's the feeling in the town of Whitehall now? Do people in Whitehall feel better protected from the police than they did before, or better served by the police than they did before?
No. The new police chief of Whitehall is a man named Jeffrey Schaffner. Been a cop down in Portage for some time, but he was originally from Whitehall. And Dan Winooski's replacement is Randy Jensen. I believe that's his name. And he, I know he just got fired from the City of Independence, and I think he got fired one other one. I know he's been an officer in three different departments within the last few years. He's really young.
Do you know why he's been fired?
That I don't know. The City of Independence, I know, held a special city council meeting just to get rid of them. There's too many complaints about them. It's, you know, meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
The woman referred to in the interview you just heard as AR was later identified as Alicia Rodriguez. We broadcast our interview with her after her civil suit related to the Winooski sexual assault was settled out of court. Next, we will listen to an excerpt from our interview with Alicia Rodriguez, who was 14 years old when she was assaulted by Winooski in his police cruiser.
Well, he had threatened me on more than one occasion. In 99, when I became pregnant with my first child, is when I decided I needed to tell somebody about what had happened. Just, you know, I didn't know how I was going to be able to deal with the pregnancy and everything with the emotional toll that the Winooski assault was taking on me. So I wrote a letter to a social worker, and I didn't hear anything back from him, so I kind of just concluded on my own that he either didn't believe me or he didn't get the letter. It was, I would say at the most about a week or so after I wrote the letter to the social worker that I approached Chief Estenson, and I told him I had to make a complaint about Winooski, and Estenson asked me if it was sexual, and I said yes, and he told me he'd come by, and, well, he didn't.
Did you ever talk to anyone else in law enforcement?
Not until DCI contacted me in January of 2004.
Who were the defendants in the lawsuit?
Okay, it was Dan Winooski, Larry Estenson, and the City of Whitehall's Employers Insurance, which was Wausau Insurance Company. Mm-hmm. So I was basically suing the city, but the insurance is pretty much what it came down to. You know, how, I don't know if you know much about insurance, but that's how it plays out. You know, since they're covered for things like this, it's basically the insurance. So.
And how? When did you file the lawsuit?
In January of this year. The criminal stuff was all done in November of 2004. Actually, I never went to court for the civil case. When we turned in our summary of judgments, which is where both sides turns in their findings on the case, and, you know, we say why there's a case and the other side says why there's not, and the judge makes his ruling, and the judge, as you know, dismissed my case. And we had already had mediation set up for the 11th of this month, and when it got dismissed, the other side, the defense, contacted my attorney and asked if we were still interested in mediation. And we said we were, just to kind of see where things were at. We actually did not think it was going to settle. But we went ahead with the mediation down in Madison, and we were able to come to an agreement. So.
What's your understanding of the reasons why the judge dismissed the civil suit in the first place?
From my understanding, it was because we were suing on the basis of violation of my civil rights. It was a civil rights case. And one of his rulings was that the threat that Wineski made, you know, with his weapon under my chin, was not a violation of my civil rights. Another one of his reasoning was that the statute of limitations had expired. And in a sexual assault case, when you're a minor at the time, you have until you're of the age of 30 to report it. Or you get an additional 2 years after the perpetrator's in prison if he was an actual threat to you, and that's why you didn't report it. So either way, I fell between those statutes because I'm not 30, and obviously Wineski has not been in prison for 2 years. But he ruled on an old statute because the original statute was just 6 years from the time of the crime, which would have put me past the statutes. But in 97, the legislator changed the statute to what I had just explained, and he didn't pay any attention to that. And when that was brought to the defense's attention, they already were aware that the judge had made a mistake. So we were all very confident that we would win on appeal.
Do you think that ruling had an effect on the settlement?
Meaning the settlement amount?
Yes.
Definitely. I'm pretty confident that had that decision come this last week instead of the week before, that we would have walked away with a larger settlement. But, you know, ultimately it changed gears when that decision came, and I had to make a decision if I wanted to go through the appeal process or get it done, because like I've stated, it's not about the amount of money. You know, I needed to, you know, make it very well noted that this cannot be tolerated or accepted. And I also had to work on getting my life back. So, and the appeal process can be quite lengthy, and I wasn't sure that I wanted to go through with that. So.
Do you think, so the defense, it's fair to argue, would have been taking advantage of the judge's erroneous ruling?
Correct. Correct. And
the insurers.
Exactly. Exactly. And they, you know, they knew obviously they had some time, even if we didn't settle that day, to kind of play their cards, because an appeal process takes, I would say, probably 9 months at the very least to even get through the appellate court. And so they knew that they had some time and they didn't have to offer up any large numbers at that time, because at that point, the ball was technically in their court. Even though we would have been the ones making the next decision about the appeal, the judge had just ruled in their favor. So the decision was, but the fact that they still wanted to mediate and the fact that they were willing to settle for more than $250,000, I think, says a lot about, you know, what they were actually thinking their chances were.
So you're putting this behind you?
Yes. I'm trying, you know, every day is a new day, and I wish I could just wake up tomorrow and say, okay, you know, it's behind me, it's over with. Unfortunately, I don't have that luxury. Just as Wineski, when his prison sentence is up, that's it. You know, he's done, and he can go on with his life. Myself, as well as all of the other women that he assaulted and took advantage of, you know, will live with this for the rest of our lives. And there's no way that I can say, you know, what effect it's going to have on me, you know, a year from now, 10 years from now. But every day seems to get a little better. And I have my upfalls as well as the downfalls. And it's just taking it day by day. And that's what I'm trying to do. You know, just move on with my family and trying to put it behind me as best as I can. I'll never be able to forget it, but to be able to live a normal life and to be able to help people because of my experience is basically what I'm going to thrive for.
So you told me you were considering possibly going to school, or?
Yes, I mean, I definitely intend on going to school. I'm not exactly sure what I might, you know, study or, you know, take into as my degree, but I know I have a lot of options with my life experiences alone that I think could make a tremendous difference in other people's lives, and that's what I want to do.
Have you thought of any general areas of study, or like you're thinking of maybe going to law school?
Yeah, I've thought about law just because I don't think there's enough legal representation out there for victims and victims' rights. We kind of get tossed around, you know, from social work to the authorities, and it's become very apparent that those aren't always the right avenues. And there's a lot of people out there who maybe have a position or their name badge says that they're able to deal with this, but they don't have a clue how to. And I think with my experience, even though it was a negative one, I can somehow turn into a positive. And that's really what I'm going to do. I'm going to do something to help other people in my situation, whether it's, you know, with law enforcement or whoever, because these things happen way too much. And there's a lot of women out there that don't report it, and that's really unfortunate.
When we talked with Terry back in February, and a lot of the reading I've done as well has led me to believe that Officer Wineski had quite a few other victims. I know you or your lawyers were in touch with some of them prior to Officer Wineski's guilty plea.
Correct.
Do you think that there's a chance that he'll be brought up on other charges?
I hope so, because it's very clear that there are other victims out there that are still within the statute, and they either have not wanted to come forward, you know, for whatever their personal reasons would be. And the Attorney General has said that if there was more women out there or victims that were within the statute of limitations, that they would definitely prosecute. And I think it's very important that they're aware of that, the women out there, because if they're, you know, maybe hesitant because of, you know, where they live or where they're at in their life, and, you know, they've tried to put it behind them, it really is not that easy to just try to walk away. And the only way you're really going to get closure is by at least trying to get some sort of justice for what was done to them. And I think that they need to at least tell their side as to what happened to them and try to seek some sort of help, you know, whether it's in the justice system or just professional help in general. Some people might be a little intimidated by the road that I've had to travel to get here because it hasn't been easy. I've never tried to make it look easy, though, because I would hate for a victim to come forward and go through what I went through and kind of be upset because, you know, I said it was going to be one way and it was the complete opposite. It's a hard road to travel, but when you get there, it's worth it. I feel that way now.
So is that advice to other people out there who are either scared or intimidated or not coming forward because they don't think they'll win?
Yeah, just they need to look inside themselves. I would never try to force somebody to come forward, but if I could help somehow to show them that it would be okay and that there are people out there that will help them get through the process, no matter how long and how hard it becomes, that in the long run, it's so much better to get it out and to start to deal with it and to know, because when you keep it inside and you know, you don't come forward for whatever reason, you feel like you're at fault and you feel like you're not, you know, worth it, you're worthless, you know, nobody's going to believe you, that it's your fault that it happened. And that's one of the worst feelings ever. And it's just not true. I mean, nobody deserves this. And, I mean, I don't care if you act a certain way, you look a certain way, your family's a certain way, that doesn't matter. And it's very easy to believe the negative stuff. And the longer you let this intimidate you, the longer they win. And they get that control. And that's what they want, is that control and that power. And, you know, the longer you keep to yourself and just kind of go inside your shell, the more they get to take advantage of you. And that needs to be stopped.
Bad cop, no donut.
Earlier today, I spoke with Terry Miles for a second time. In this interview, we discuss his candidacy for sheriff of Trempealeau County, Wisconsin, the same agency he blames for ignoring and covering up the abuses of Officer Daniel Wineski. As far as your motivation for going after this position, can we take a guess and guess that it's connected to some of your problems that you've or some of your criticism you've directed at law enforcement in the past?
Yeah, you'd be right in that guess.
Can you get a little more specific than that?
No, after the whole Wineski issue was exposed, and it came to light that several county officers, you know, knew about what was going on, and that these events and the sexual assaults, as they referred to them as rumors, were routinely discussed at, you know, police officer parties and events. Nothing was done. There were no changes in the sheriff's department. And I believe it needs reform, and the people that are running for sheriff right now, there's five candidates, and three of them are police officers, and two of them have reputations of their own.
Oh, can you tell us a little bit about that? Are you prepared to talk about that a little bit, or?
I'm not sure how wise that would be with an election coming up. I mean, as far as,
right.
Well, everything I can say, I can substantiate.
Right, okay.
I know the one officer ran before, and it kind of ended up when a newspaper article came out that he enjoyed lighting round hay bales on fire and rolling them down hills.
That's a little weird. Are these guys the opponents? Are they all current sheriff's department employees?
Yes, one for 29 years, one for 19, and I'm not sure about the other. And then there's one independent candidate.
Is Niederkorn the person who holds the job currently?
He is not. Niederkorn is, and he is not going to run again.
Is he throwing his support behind any of the other candidates? Presumably, he's not going to be throwing his support behind you.
No, he's stepping out as quietly as he possibly can. He made some public statement that by contract he can't state what his new job is or who he's going to be working for, and I think that's just a... just another farce, you know. He's afraid to tell the truth.
So he says he's retiring so that he can accept a better job.
Yeah,
somewhere
he's
else.
He's choosing not to run, but by contract he can't say what the job is or who he's working for.
Let's talk a little bit about the media and how they've been to you down there. I was surprised to read in one of the local papers that they had mentioned that you were running for the position. So that's good news. They've been at least responsive to your announcement, the announcement of your candidacy.
Yes, I've been. I got pretty good news coverage out of most of the papers down there. And I'm getting a bit of a name in that area too, obviously.
Right, from your involvement in the Wineski thing. Have any of the media down there been supportive at all?
Yeah, the Arcadia News Leader's been really great. And actually, the Lacrosse Trib and the Winona Daily, and Winona being, you know, in a different state, they got pretty good articles. And the Blair Press did. The White Old Times was actually a pretty good article. The Galesville Republican is the one that they haven't got around to it yet. And in the words of the owner, he wants to edit out all the slanderous and liable material I put in my press release. The same material the other five or six newspapers ran with.
Right, and I didn't read anything. I at least read the Arcadia News Leader article, and I don't remember reading anything particularly offensive in that.
No. But the Galesville Republican also refused to cover the Wineski story.
Oh.
They also refused to cover the story where the man in Galesville was banned from public property because he had asked for public records.
What are your plans? If you were elected sheriff, tell us about some of the changes you'd make.
Well, departmental reform is like the first phrase that comes to mind, but it's not so much that as with Trempealeau County Sheriff's Department. You got to start out at square one. I've asked for written policy, you know, copies of written policies, and they just told me they don't exist.
So you are looking at your initial role as establishing policy and procedure on paper.
Yes. Deputy can do no wrong. If you file a complaint and he's not guilty of a policy violation, because there are no policies. one time the officers over there shot a man out in the cornfield, and it was a lot of people really questioned the shooting. And instead of using the funeral home that the county holds a contract with, they used a retired police officer to take the body to Madison for an autopsy. I asked for a policy on non-department personnel doing departmental work or work that would have been held by contract, and as usual, there is no policy. The domestic abuse policy, I don't think they had one before. It took me several months to get it when I asked for it, and, you know, it's got the policy number and replaces. All those are blank. And same with the disciplinary policy. You ask for it, and then a few months later, you get it, but once you get again, you know, they're just, those two were required by law. And all the other policies I've asked for, they don't exist.
So that's step one, write policy. Is there anything else that you have in mind? I know that I know from speaking with you that you're concerned about the use of tasers.
Yes, the use of tasers and the use of drugs by deputies. There's no drug testing. And they bought the tasers without notifying the public.
Without any public consultation at all, no.
No, I saw nothing about it in the news. I didn't hear anything about it until they had them. And tasers have a bad reputation for misuse and causing people to die.
Yes, yeah, people who listen to this show will already be quite familiar with that. How have the public been down there, Terry? Have you been out talking to people at all, hitting the streets? And and what are people saying?
The people like me. I think some are afraid to, afraid to show how much they do support me. And some have came to me rather secretively, but a majority of them have came to me very openly. You know, they like what I did with the Lunesky case, and they want me to be the sheriff.
Do you think your chances are reasonably good?
Yeah, I think they are.
So you're going to run as a Democrat. How does this work for those of us who aren't familiar with the way your local election law works? You have to pass a primary?
Yes, we have a primary in September, then November 7 we have the main election, and so in the primary might decide it all. You've got a 29-year detective and a 19-year detective and me in the Democratic primary.
What about the other American party? Do they field a candidate also?
The Republican Party, I believe Officer Davinson is running as a Republican, but that's just rumor. I haven't seen it in print yet. And then the other person that's in is running as independent, but he runs every year, every election.
Have you made any specific promises to people along the way, other than what you've told us about already?
I said there would be no more taking the squad cars home at night. That policy was designed, that is actually one of the few written policies, and that was designed on the event of a high-speed chase, you know, saying running from east to west. They could call an off-duty officer on the west side, he could jump out of bed, run to his garage, jump in a squad car, and set up a roadblock. Which, if it's a high-speed chase, you can cross Trempealeau County faster. It's just an excuse to give him a personal vehicle.
Well, you have some issues with high-speed chases themselves, right?
Yes. Yeah, I would ban them, unless it's a known dangerous felon. I would just write a policy banning high-speed chases. If you can get a license plate number, that's odds are you're going to know the person in, you know, especially in Trempealeau County. And most cities and some states have banned high-speed chases. It's a liability. It's a danger to the public. Well, I did make one campaign button that people over there really seem to enjoy. I can't make them fast enough.
Oh, and what does it say?
Wineski wouldn't have voted for Miles, would you? Vote Terry Miles, 2006.
Nice.
At first, I thought I went a little bit too far with those, but people love them.
And you're going to be involved in a parade this weekend? What's that all about?
I will be doing my hometown of Osseo, Lake Martha Day's parade this Sunday. Just a car with a, you know, old Corvette with a sign on the roof that says Terry Miles for Sheriff. I'll have people walking the sidewalks, passing out flyers, candy to the kids, and, of course, campaign buttons.
It sounds like you've got stuff fairly well organized down there, Terry, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
You can find out more about Officer Daniel Wineski, Terry Miles, and Alicia Rodriguez by visiting our website at www.badcopnodonut.fm. Bad Cop No Donut is produced at CKLN 88.1 FM in Toronto and can be heard on campus, community, pirate, and internet radio stations throughout the United States, Canada, and elsewhere. This show is available freely for nonprofit use. You can download the show, sign up for our email newsletter, support the show, read news, and find out more about this program at the show's website, www.badcopnodonut.fm. We value your input. Please send your comments or story ideas to ron@ckln.fm. Thanks to everyone who sent in articles for this week's program. I'm Ron Anisich. Thanks for listening.